Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Women Emerging podcast. I'm Julian Middleton, founder of Women Emerging and your podcast host. Every Wednesday, I explore how women lead differently. Over time, all of us who are part of Women Emerging are determined to redefine leading so that more of us can say, if that's leading, I'm in. So what happens next? What happens when two cultures meet? Two cores and two flexes. Now, 2 weeks ago, we looked at cultural intelligence generally and at the prerequisites for cultural intelligence. Let's remind us, cultural intelligence being the ability to work with people from other cultures and thrive in so doing. Last week, we looked at cultural intelligence in practice and at the concepts of core and flex. We recognise that the starting point for cultural intelligence is understanding the most difficult culture of all, which is your own culture. And we looked at how unpicking your own culture can be made so infinitely easier if you look at it through the window of core and flex. This week, we're moving on from looking at your own culture, one culture, to looking at what happens when your culture meets another culture. So it's in this episode that your cultural intelligence will start to really be put to the test. In the very same way, it helps to look at the meeting of two cultures through the window of core and flex. It helps you to sort of avoid falling into those horrible traps, like that trap of sort of ignoring differences in cultures, pretending that they just don't exist, they're not in the room, and pretending that nothing is really happening, sort of glossing the whole thing over. And certainly I think cultural intelligence, and particularly the core and flex concept, will help you when you're leading a meeting of where two cultures are coming together, so that when they do come together, it's a moment of insight and innovation rather than a moment of collision or clash, or even worse, crash. Before we sort of jump into the sort of the details of the core and flex when two cultures come together, can I sort of suggest five things that it's really worth keeping in mind when two cultures come together? The first is that you need to pause, slow down, take a moment. You need to pause. It makes me really smile because pausing is not exactly my strength. It's probably my greatest weakness. I find pausing as a first response incredibly difficult because I tend to charge into everything. But the truth is, you do need to pause when you're about to go into a moment where there are two cultures or two flexes and two cores are coming together. And you must pause for a minute, because sometimes the instincts that have served you so well in your own culture may actually do the opposite and might not serve you at all well. And it's only by standing back for a second, taking a few minutes and just thinking things through. I can think of so many moments when I've charged into things, arrived at a meeting, not thought through the culture that I was about to work with, and just getting it all wrong and causing a major crash. So pausing, absolutely crucial. Pause, talk to yourself, say, hang on, don't trust your instincts, just think things through first. I think the second one is don't rely on language alone. Language so often triggers an instant, distracting, and often quite helpful response. Someone says a word that works for them and it absolutely does not work for you. And it's very likely to happen. I mean, it's inevitable that it's going to happen because words mean different things in different cultures. I have my trigger words, you'll have yours. Take care to listen, to watch for other signals, and don't let words get in the way of using all your senses. The third is don't immediately flex, because you, like I, like many, many women all over the world, have rooted in our upbringing the need to be a sort of, to me, well, let's face it, the need to be a good girl. We seek approval. We want to be that good girl that makes everybody happy and brings everybody together and everything's wonderful. But in that eagerness to be the good girl, do not abandon all your core and start adapting and flexing to everybody. I spoke to Elspeth about the meetings between cultures that she's watched in South Africa over the years, where language and flexing have often and rapidly turned meetings of cultures into collisions of cultures. Elspeth was for years a colleague of mine, and we ran many a leadership program together.
For me, the situation that arises more often is that it's not really a clashing core. I think, you know, we take language for granted, and yet language so often leads us down rabbit holes. And a particular choice of words will mean one thing to you and another thing to me. And so, you know, I think that's one of the most profound learnings that comes through in our programs, is when folks start to unpack what they mean when they've used a certain phrase, then they begin to find each other. But there is a tendency to jump to adversarial positions based on an initial understanding of the words. Now, you know, obviously often we don't have time for these long conversations to figure out what exactly you meant when you said X, Y, Z. And so that's where stuckness can happen. But I've seen that so often. I think another thing that has been so interesting for me recently is to encounter in the most recent program that we ran in a community that a difference of opinion is by definition adversarial, that it that there isn't space for other people to think and believe differently from me. And if they do, then we are in conflict with each other. And to see someone discover, most profoundly, a young man with legal training, to see someone discover that the difference of opinion is not only tolerable, but it's also valuable and can really enrich and enhance my thinking. So not just that clashing cause, you know, I think having seen a very graphic example of this recently where we assumed, you know, his starting point was that our cores are clashing, and the word clash with all its most resonant negativity, to move from that to recognizing the value of that difference. Let's not call it clash anymore, but let's call it difference, and the possibility that emanates from that, you know. And I think that's what always has fascinated me so much about cultural intelligence, is that its central message is that difference is valuable. And if we can learn to work with it constructively, then it holds such enormous possibility. And I'm sure that's rooted in my South African background, you know, having lived that reality, lived that transition, that difference is a source of conflict, negativity, and immense challenge to you know, the Rainbow Nations paradigm ideas. We can work this thing in a way that makes it profoundly valuable for us.
I asked Elspeth for an example. Illustrate this for me.
In the first community that we dealt with, which was a very traditional Zulu community, so lunch was provided on the first day, and I wasn't too aware of the dynamics around lunch. But I heard subsequently, as we were debriefing in the evening, my colleague, again, it's Young Tozeka, said that the man who was the most senior man there had indicated clearly his expectation of her that she would serve his lunch. So not only did she need to dish it up onto a plate, but she needed to carry it to him at the table where he was sitting. And she had done so, but I, you know, in the debrief in the evening, there was such a confusion in her. There was partly a sense of outrage that would have been expected of her, but equally not knowing how to deal with it in the circumstances. And, you know, it's again, she's a modern young professional woman, a fabulously talented young woman. Now, how do you hold that trueness to yourself in terms of who I am and what I stand for and where I've progressed to? She comes from a very traditional background in the Eastern Cape. And then, you know, in a situation, how do you handle that situation in such a way that you don't offend and yet you don't betray yourself? You know, you don't insist on doing it your way, and yet you find a way to connect with the other person so that you equally don't deny them what in a particular cultural context may be their way. We had a long talk about that, and we raised it as a topic for conversation in the course the next day around who should have been flexing in that environment. Somebody had to flex, and how would we, you know, find that? And there, I think it was awareness raising. You know, I think that the gentleman concerned, when he heard about how she had felt in that situation, I think he felt quite a lot of remorse that he had expected her to do something that was culturally foreign for her. And he'd made an assumption around her as a young Black woman and what would be appropriate and what wouldn't be appropriate. So, yeah, that was a very interesting and complicated and rich one.
Thank you, Elspeth. You bring core and flex to life when two cultures are colliding. So first three is when you are in the leading position and two cultures come together. First, pause. Second, don't let language define the meeting. And third, don't just revert to good girl mode and flex to please. The fourth is take care not to go immediately onto the defensive when you come across a different culture. Don't assume that in its very existence, a culture that's different from yours is almost a rejection of yours or even a criticism of it. Riedemer recognizes this tendency in herself.
So wherever, and this is something which I've discovered, that whenever I am being questioned, I go on a defensive mode where I try to prove my innocence, and I still don't know the answer to why that's the case. And again, I've been thinking about it, and some of it can be contributed to, again, my culture, my upbringing, where we grew up in a system where we are always taught to never make a mistake, and we are not comfortable with failures. And, you know, even if I fail, even if I have bruised knees, I need to stand up quickly and get going. And I think that's perhaps one few reasons that make me a bit defensive. And like I said, I'm still unpicking it for myself, Julia. And I try not to be defensive wherever there is a situation. But it's hard. It's hard for me to own up my failures still. But I think now I'm willing to stand up with a bruised knee, but cover it with a Band-Aid. Let it heal rather than immediately get up and get going.
So if that was number four, let's go on to number five. I think it is really hard to resist the temptation when you come across an unfamiliar culture not to judge it immediately. And to judge it with your own culture as the benchmark. You slip into thinking, is this culture better or worse than mine? Is it quicker or slower, brighter or darker than mine? But always with my culture as the benchmark against which to judge all others. And I think that is one of the trickiest things to do, and it's the most important thing to do. Don't walk into two cultures coming together and think about your own culture as the benchmark to use to judge other cultures. It's really, really not helpful. Yours isn't the benchmark. It's just different from the one you're coming across now. Terry sees this really, really, really clearly.
I think it's so dangerous because, as my grandfather used to say, it's not all about you. We are, human beings are communal. We've seen that around the world with this pandemic, that everything we do affects one another. We can't move forward in healthy ways unless we recognize that everyone is simply not like us. And one of our congregations has a beautiful sort of tagline. They talk about the divinity in diversity. And what that implies is that, God made all this stuff incredibly different. So who are we to disrespect it? There's something of God that's in each place. And every, again, I'm a minister, a Christian minister, so I have that particular lens. But my dad and my grandfather, I said, it's not all about you. You aren't the only person in the house. The way you see the world isn't the only way to see the world. So if you place a deficiency on my difference, you are diminishing my very humanity. And that's why I think this is so important. You're diminishing other people's humanity if you don't respect and don't have humility in the face of who they authentically are.
Thank you, Terry. Now we move into the last, the sixth, and maybe the most important. If you are leading and two cultures come together, then your own mindset will, as we know, be incredibly important. And key to this is avoiding framing difference as a moment of weakness or potential weakness. I think that if you recognize that it's a moment of strength, full of possibility, a moment where ideas might just emerge, where really messy problems might just get solved, and where women who really, really star when they bring people together, because we're extraordinary at bringing cultures together, it may be a moment where women will really thrive, because you absolutely rejoice in the bringing together of cultures. You thrive in it. So those are my six starting points. If you're in the leading position when cultures come together, if you can approach this as a moment full of potential, if you can pause, if you can avoid being triggered by language, if you can avoid jumping to the defensive or to the all flex mode, And if you are really, really clear in your mind that your culture is not the benchmark, then I think this moment that other people regard as one full of tension become when you're leading, a moment that is interesting and helpful and positive and valuable. So when these two cultures come together, come on, let's go back to it. Core and flex, how does it help you navigate it when you're the one who's leading? In episode 2, we drew a cone and flipped it onto its side with the tip, the core, on the left and the opening, the flex, on the right. We use this to illustrate our own core and flex, and we talked about the dividing line between the two, between core and flex, which has to be kept under constant review. The fact that it moves gently along the cone as you meet other cultures and work with different people is the strongest indicator of your healthy cultural intelligence. Now, of course, there's not one cone and one core and one flex. There are two cones. And for the sake of our drawing, let's put a second cone and let's make it cross, maybe from top to bottom of the page. Let's have another culture. And at the top of this second cone, at the top up there where the tip is, that's where your core is. And at the bottom is where your flex is, where it opens up into your flex. Now, I think it's worth trying to figure out where you are at the point of intersection of these two cones. Are you in the area where you're both in flex? Are you in the areas, and there are two of them, where one is in flex and the other person is in core? One culture is in flex, the other culture is in core. And then, of course, there's the area where both cultures, both people are in core. I think it's really, really helpful when you meet another culture to understand exactly where you are in the overlap. So let's work through each one, starting with flex-flex. Logically, it's the easiest to deal with. It certainly appears to be the easiest. Both of you can flex to the other, and you're both enjoying doing so. Just for a moment, I think it's worth taking care, because I think in the flex-flex area of the overlap, possibly some of, certainly mine, and often many people's worst mistakes take place, because everybody assumes that we're all in flex. But maybe, just maybe, we're not. I've got a good example of this. I went into this meeting and I assumed that there were only women there. So I thought, right, no problem. Everything will go smoothly. I hardly need to think about it. It happened because once a year I do a speech for very, very senior women in the corporate sector in the United from the United States who are studying in the UK. They're studying in Cambridge. And the year I remember so well, I rushed to the station, to Liverpool Street Station, to get me on the train that would take me to Cambridge. And I just made the train. And as I sort of jumped onto it, as literally the doors were about to close, I fell and stumbled getting onto the train. So I got on, but just in time. And then I looked down and there was definitely a tear on my trousers. And there was a very small amount of blood. It wasn't a cut. It was a small scrape, a small graze, but it didn't look very good. And certainly the trousers didn't look. So I cleared up the scrape as best I could on the train, but there wasn't much I could do about the tear on the trousers. And when I arrived in Cambridge, as usual, I charged to the college that they were all meeting at and walked in. And it was one of those stages where there were rows and rows and rows of women all rising up in front of me. And the first thing I did was to apologise for my delay and also for my trousers. And I started my talk. And it was, of course, on cultural intelligence. And I was talking about core and flex. And after about 4 or 5 minutes of the talk, I actually stopped still and looked up at these rows of women and said, please forgive me for stopping for a moment, but I have this feeling that nobody's listening to a word I'm saying because you're all staring at my trousers. So I explained again what had happened that day, that I'd fallen at the station, and there was a sort of grumbling in the audience. And then somebody, thank heavens, had the courage to come forward and to say to me what I needed to understand the audience, which was that what I'd done was completely impossible in their world. So I started explaining that in my core, and it is in my core, I have a deep, deep fundamental belief and commitment that if I'm going to do a talk, I will turn up and do that speech. That is the overriding sense in my core. If you're expecting me to deliver, I will deliver come hell or high water. I hate letting people down. So I tried to say to them is what you're seeing in front of you in the talk is not somebody who's trying to be disrespectful. It's somebody who's trying to to explain their core and overcome their embarrassment about their trousers. But to them, it was a no-no. The fun was that this started this extraordinary conversation about core and flex. And I never finished the speech because all the women started to talk about the rules in the positions that they're in, and also what was deep in their own core, and that under no circumstances at all would they ever be seen in public with a tear in their trousers. And if I'm honest, as they talked, I began to judge them myself, because I thought, these women don't care about anything other than their appearance. And if I'm honest too, I was sort of thinking, they lack grit. They're not strong enough. But the more I listened, the more I began to understand that what was in my core absolutely was not in their core. And that I'd made the assumption on the train, and I remember distinctly making it, that I was talking to a group of fellow women and that we would be in flex, and they would overlook my trousers and accept my apology. And I'd not taken my own advice onto the train. I dashed as usual and not thought things through. And in my haste, I was so sure they would forgive me, and indeed forgive me and slightly admire me for keeping going despite everything. But the truth is, we weren't all in flex that day, and I learnt a very, very big lesson. So that's flex. The other part of the intersection could be that one person is in core and the other person is in flex. I think this one is very common. And I think that our response to it is depressingly common too. I think we can all say that we've heard some of those sentences. And indeed, we haven't just heard them. To be honest, I think we've all perhaps said them ourselves. Things like, if I can be flexible, why can't they? If I'm doing it, why can't they? Or even worse, I think I've heard myself saying, I'm doing all the flexing here and nobody else is flexing at all. And the truth is that on this last one, the response should be, you're doing lots of flexing, but haven't taken the time to recognize how much everybody else is flexing for you. A good illustration, I think, of this one, where one person is in flex and the other is in core, is around the very oversimplistic issue of timekeeping. In my core, being on time is quite important. It always has been. It makes me feel professional. It makes me feel ready. It makes me feel that I'm respecting the other person by not wasting their time. And I suppose there's a certain amount of control in it, but being on time is really important to me. Somehow I feel like I'm in control of a situation. I remember the first time working in a very different culture from mine and realizing how much everybody was laughing at me for my obsession about being on time. And they were all sort of really pushing back and saying, come on, Julia, leave your controlling uptightness behind. Don't bring it in here. And they would explain to me that for them, being on time to the moment was not part of their core. Slowly, I began to adapt, and not just on timing, but it also made me realize that I was judging other people as unprofessional when they arrived what I perceived to be late. And also, I think, as the person then leading the meeting, I probably started the meeting pretty grumpy because nobody had treated me with respect by arriving on time, or I thought that's what they were saying to me. Because, go back to it, being on time for me is a professional benchmark. But I had to adapt and slowly begin to realize when I was doing that piece of work that 10 minutes late wasn't really late at all for the people around me. But then it was interesting because I then worked only a few months later in a very different country. And it was absolutely fascinating because I used to arrive absolutely on time for the meeting because that was in my core. And I rapidly realized that all the colleagues around me thought I was already late. Because in that culture, if you didn't arrive for a meeting 10 minutes before the meeting started, you were being rude. And certainly when I arrived on exactly on the hour, I could see people looking at their watches and thinking I, this time, had been the one who was disrespectful. I'm conscious that you must be getting a bit bored of my voice. So this time, listen to Kelly. She is an amazing rugby player. She captained many international teams. And she has a story of flex meets core, which I've never forgotten.
My whole curiosity is to find that balance, the balance between each person, and it's different between their uniqueness and belonging. So in a team culture, how do you find that someone has an ultimate play where they feel like they have a voice, they're unique, but they also have that sense of belonging? And I know I learned the hard way in the sense that I know within my core, I always go for the uniqueness and trying to find the uniqueness in someone by going straight to the relationship. And so I will, I coached Japan for years, and my first go-to as a rugby coach or as a leader is always to the relationship. I always go to the relationship because I want to find the uniqueness. And often I forget about the belonging side of it. So I learned one time when I was coaching in Japan, and it had been in the first probably 6 months I coached there, and I learned a lot about each of the individuals. And we were warming up, and in a sporting sense, in the Western world, when you do a warm up for any kind of sport, it's really short, sharp, get over and done with. And the Japanese were, it was an hour warm up, and I was getting really agitated. And my Japanese friend had come up to me and said, he said, Kelly, I see that you're getting agitated. And he said, I just want to ask you a couple of questions. He said, since you've lived here, have you noticed any road rage in Japan? And I said, no. And he said, did you notice, like, we had gone through that big tsunami? And did you notice when people were queued up for, 2 hours for milk? And the person at the store put their hand up and said, look, we have no more milk. And everyone just walked away. Did you notice any anger? And I went, no. And he said, yes, you need to understand we're built on patience and that our culture is based on. And it was a real hard learning from me from a Western perspective coming in and saying, wow, I did not even consider that. I did not consider that belonging, why they felt like they belonged in a team because of their culture. Sure enough, they did their warm up, and it took them an hour and a half to warm up. And they were the best first half team ever. They were ready.
Thank you, Kelly. So we've done flex, we've done flex core and core flex. Now for the third part of that intersection, where core meets core. You have to be prepared for it because, let's face it, no one will ever have the same core as you. It was one of the hardest things that I had to come to terms with when my children were in their teenage years, realizing that I no longer had the same core as them. The fact is that everyone has a different core. So there's always the potential when core meets core for a collision, a clash, or a crash. But we're going to cover core meets core in the next episode, next week. So come back next week. That'll be fun. In the meantime, I send you lots of love, Julia.